I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. You've probably noticed that dog parks have been popping up in neighborhoods and townships across the region. It's a place to let your dog run free and socialize with other dogs. There are some basic rules like clean up after your dog, and sometimes there are even water stations and seating for dog owners. We'll be talking with Matthew Gilbert, TV critic for the Boston Globe and author of a new book called Off the Leash in just a couple of minutes. It's about his introduction to living with a dog, a lab named Toby, and their visits to a local dog park. He has some names for the human types often found at dog parks, including Pupus ignorica. But first, we asked Rebecca Braulio to join us. She's the founder of the PhillyDog.com blog, and it's a guide to dog-friendly events, parks, and more in the greater Philadelphia area. She has two dogs, Dash and Astrid. And Rebecca Braulio, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
You're very nice to have you. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Coaim. So, Rebecca, is Philadelphia a dog-friendly city?
It is so incredibly dog-friendly.
What's your criteria?
My criteria is that a dog-friendly city has dog parks, dog-friendly businesses, lots of rescue or animal welfare organizations, and that there be plenty of fun events that you can bring your dog to.
Do you have a favorite dog park in the city?
I'd have to say that that's hard. I have three favorites. So the three that I frequented the most were Mario Lanza every morning.
Mario Lanza, okay.
Mario Lanza every morning at 6:30, I would go and take my dog Dash. Sear Dog Park. And then the Schuylkill Dog Run, which is an amazing dog park that was recently redone, I guess, about a year or 2 years ago. Those are the big three ones in Center City that I really love.
And what about the ones that your dogs love?
Well, now
it is about the dogs, Rebecca.
I forgot.
Exactly.
Well, interestingly enough, so Dash doesn't do so well in dog parks. It's really important to make sure that when you take your dog to a dog park that your dog is actually enjoying himself. It became more of a social hour for me.
It's okay.
So I think Dash felt most comfortable in Mario Lanza. It was smaller, more regular dogs that were there. Although he did like the little dog park section of the Schuylkill Dog Park as well.
And he has, you've written about him. He has some anxiety issues, yes?
Oh, yes. Yes, he does.
And how about Astrid?
So Astrid, I adopted last October from a great rescue, City of Elderly Love. She is blind, so she's only 5 pounds, so she is not a dog park visitor. If I were to bring her into one, though, I would feel safest bringing her into the small dog park at the Schuylkill Run.
And it sounds like in Philadelphia, and even outside of Philadelphia, that there are such a range of parks. I mean, some of them are, have running water and, all these, amenities, and some are more basic. Is it hard to start a dog park in Philadelphia?
It can be tough. I think, and it's funny that you ask that, because I recently got a request from someone who was looking to start one, because the best dog parks are the ones that really have a committed community, where you have a group of people who are committed to putting the time in, to look into the zoning, the permits, to get some support, not just from local residents and businesses, but in the government. Because a lot goes into it, a lot more than you would think. You have to worry about, rules, regulations, charging memberships, upkeep, who's going to keep the gravel or the wood clean, the wood chips clean. A lot of work goes into it, and of course a lot of money is required too.
Well, and I wonder whether there are communities or there have been instances where there's been community pushback saying, we don't want a bunch of barking dogs
right
next door.
Sure. Well, the most recent one that's come up is the proposed dog park near Spring Garden, which is between a church and a school. It's near the 1800 block of Green Street, and the community has concerns, about noise and pollution and things like that. So it's really getting everyone on the same page and having clear expectations about what it's going to be.
Do all parks, or do most of the parks in the city or even the surrounding area, are they fenced in?
Well, the ones that I have listed on my site, the ones that are actual dog parks, are fenced in. You have some more of the pop-up informal ones that are parks that are adapted but aren't really. A couple examples are Pistorius Park, but that's more in Chestnut Hill.
Right.
The Irish Dog Memorial area, at one point in time, a lot of people had their dogs in. There was a small fence, but it wasn't really... When I talk about dog parks, I think about, you know, like Oriana Hill up in Northern Liberties, which is, there's a membership, there are rules, you know, people contribute, people volunteer their time.
And I'm assuming one of, you know, the number one rule is clean up after your dog. And that, it's amazing to me that you have to make that a rule, because you would think that would be kind of automatic.
Well, I think what happens is it's dog parks are just as much for the people sometimes, because you bond with the owners and start chatting, and you aren't necessarily paying attention to your dog. So that should be the number two rule, is to always pay attention to your dog.
Well, in fact, our guest who's waiting in the wings has a name for that, Pupus ignorica.
It's great.
Let me get, looks like Pat from Marlton, New Jersey, to join us. Hi, Pat, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, how you doing?
Good.
So I'm so happy you have this topic on tonight. I go to Freedom Park in Medford. It's a wonderful, wonderful park. It's probably about 50 acres of strictly dog park. There's strains back there. But one of the problems that dog parks, you know, I've run into is they're basically community supported. The township doesn't support them. So, you know, anything and everything that has to be done with them is done by the people who use them. And unfortunately, a lot of people partake in them, but don't do their part to, you know, clean, not only just cleaning up after yourself, but somebody's got to take the trash can out a quarter mile to the road to have it picked up. Township won't do it. I've met a lot of friends back there. I think it's a great innovation that I've only seen in the last 10 years or so.
Well, Pat, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I think I heard that right, Rebecca, a 50-acre park for dogs.
That's amazing.
That sounds pretty nice.
But he's right. I mean, the best, most successful dog parks have a committee of members who will make sure that those things get done and who will recruit other volunteers. It's a lot of work.
I'm curious about, there are things that happen at parks, and sometimes bad things, including mm-hmm. dogs getting into dog fights. How is that policed, and how have you seen that being dealt with?
Well, that's a really great question. My own dog was actually attacked in a
really?
Dog park, and there really wasn't anyone else around. A good dog park that has a board will have rules and regulations set out and will actually have a procedure, and will have like a bulletin board where they post those rules, procedure, phone numbers. But, you know, many times, you know, dogs will be dogs, and the responsibility ultimately goes to the owner. If you know that your dog is not the best fit for a dog park, you should not be bringing your dog to the dog park. If an animal does get hurt or bites, you know, you obviously have to get names. You have to make sure that they have their vaccinations. You need to get contact information for the hospital. And then a whole legal, you know, process can then start from that, to see whether the dog who is a dangerous dog, it's risky. You need to know when you go to a dog park that they are animals. Not, you don't know every animal in that park, and they can and some fight.
You mentioned the fact, and I think it's true, that dog parks are as much for people as they are for dogs. So when you're at the dog park, or when you used to go to the dog park, was it just talking about dogs all the time, or do you make a certain kind of friend when you're at a dog park with another dog owner?
You do. You really do. It's so great for the community, because the neighbors get to know each other better. A dog is a great icebreaker. Two dogs getting along and playing is an even better one. You know, getting to know different things that were going on in the neighborhood, in the community, talking about new businesses that were popping up, or different events that were going on in Philly. different rescue organizations. It's just such a great way to really get to know the people that you live with. So we would talk not just about our dog's bad habits or things, you know, things they're
like your children, right?
Right. But also just what was going on in our lives. You know, at one point I was looking for a new job, and the person in the dog park, you know, put me into contact with some people to talk to. So it's not only great for making friends, it's great for networking, and it's obviously a great way to get your dog some exercise.
Well, and we talk about dogs being social creatures, but so are human beings. I mean,
right.
You know, we need this stuff as well. I'm wondering, too, about introducing a new dog to a park. And
sure.
One wonders whether it isn't sort of like seventh grade, you know, where there are cliques and there's the in-crowd and the out-crowd, and how this new animal gets introduced, and perhaps the animal and the person who lives with that animal.
Sure. I can tell you the first time I brought Dash to a dog park, I did everything wrong.
Really?
We went to Seeker, and it was in the middle of the day. It was very busy in the dog park, and Dash is a Yorkie, so he's a little guy, and we walked into the gate, and I still had him on his leash, and, you know, good 10, 15 dogs rushed the gate, and I clenched the leash a little tighter and drug him in and didn't take him off the leash. You should always take your dog off the leash when you go into a dog park. And I was so panicked. You need to prepare yourself to, one, go to the park when it's at a down time, when there's not many dogs there. If you have a small dog, try to go to a small dog park until your dog gets used to it. And if your dog does well with big dogs, then great, move up. But if you know that your dog is skittish or your dog isn't always friendly to every kind of dog, again, I'm really not for bringing them to the dog park. It's just too risky, and it's not fair to your dog to put them in a situation where they might bite.
Well, about a minute before we have to say goodbye, Rebecca, you've mentioned Seeker, a dog park, several times, and I'm looking at something from Curb saying that it won Best Philly Dog Park.
Seeker is a really great, great dog park that has a really active community around it. They've done a lot of work on the park to improve the dog run. They have had happy hours, flea markets to help raise money. It's really a great spot to go. It's a good group of people. They also have the water source too.
Oh, how nice is that? Well, mm-hmm. Rebecca Braulio, thank you so much for getting our conversation started.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And she's the founder of the Philly Dog. The PhillyDog.com blog, a guide to dog-friendly events and parks and much more here in the greater Philadelphia area. And beginning our conversation talking about dog parks, the dogs that go there, the people that go there as well. Matthew Gilbert is waiting in the wings. He's the author of a new memoir called Off the Leash. And again, we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back.
The Fleischer Art Memorial supports WHYY and offers a chance to explore your creative side this fall. With a 117-year tradition of making art accessible to all, Fleischer offers classes and workshops for artists of all skill levels from throughout the Delaware Valley. Register now for one of 70-plus workshops in painting, photography, sculpture, ceramics, printmaking, art history, and more. Fall classes begin September 8th. Registration and tuition information at fleischer.org.
Almost nothing in the music business says success like a Weird Al parody.
It's sort of a signal that an artist has reached a certain plateau in their career. You know, if you've got the Grammys, they've got the platinum albums, then they get the Weird Al parody. So it's just part of the triumvirate there.
Weird Al Yankovic is my guest next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Paul Reiser's gone back to stand-up and written a Kindle single about what he learned from legends like Carl Reiner, Carol Burnett, and Mel Brooks on his TV show Mad About You.
These are people that certainly had earned the right to walk through anything or phone it in, and they never, ever did. They worked diligently, way past what you would expect.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about the fact that dog parks have been popping up all over the country, certainly here in the Delaware Valley. We've been talking a bit about some of the rules and regulations of dog parks and also some of the things that happen when people go to dog parks. And joining us now is Matthew Gilbert. He's television critic for the Boston Globe, and he's written a new memoir called Off the Leash, and it's about his introduction to living with a dog. He's got a yellow lab named Toby, and his experiences, or their experiences, I should say, at their local dog park. And Matthew Gilbert, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Marty, it's great to be with you.
Well, nice to have you with us. And again, to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Even before we talk about your dog, Toby, let's talk about, is it Amory Park? That's where you and Toby go? Describe that for our listeners.
Oh, it's a little bit of heaven. It's tucked into sort of apartment-filled neighborhood in Brookline, Massachusetts, which is where I live, which is just outside the border of Boston. And, you know, like a lot of urban parks, it's a little gem. It's got a beautiful grassy field with a baseball diamond and a bunch of, you know, pastoral, romantic, weeping willows around the edges. Yeah, it's special.
And it sounds like there's also then this fenced-in area where the dogs go to play.
No.
Interesting.
And I'm not sure about Philadelphia, but in Boston, in Brookline, most of the parks are multi-use. Because of the way they're funded, have to be open to everyone. So they're not permitted to fence us off for the most part. So we are coexisting with non-dog people, as you and Rebecca were just talking about.
Well, let's talk a bit about Toby. This is your dog, and interestingly, you didn't grow up with dogs. In fact, Matt, you didn't even really like dogs until you fell in love, married your husband, and I guess along with him came the love of dogs.
Exactly. It's funny because I'm so ensconced in the dog world now, but for most of my life, for my first 40 years, I was terrified by dogs, and even worse, I was kind of disgusted by them.
Really?
You know, if I happened to touch a dog accidentally, or if I happened to touch something that a dog had just touched, my hand would buzz until I could actually get to a sink and wash it off. You know, I was phobic. And I can't believe it now, because I kiss Toby, my dog, on his snout probably 200 times a day, at least, without even thinking twice about where that snout might have been, you know, earlier in the day. And you're right. What happened was I met a guy named Tom and fell in love with him. And, you know, that kind of opened up my heart a bit. Mm. I think falling in love can do that. And Tom is a dog person, has always had dogs, grew up with them, and everyone in his family has dogs. So even though when we met, Tom did not have a dog at that moment, he'd recently lost his beloved Golden, everyone in his family had at least one dog. His 87-year-old aunt has four dogs. So
you were fated to be a dog person, it sounds.
It sounds like that, doesn't it? And so it happened. Before I knew it, I couldn't imagine living without a dog.
And here you are now. Had you, though, had a bad experience with dogs, to be so afraid of them and to have a kind of germ phobia of dogs?
No. I think that does scar a lot of people. I have met many people who, you know, were attacked as children or just barked at ferociously. For me, I think it maybe was deeper in a way. I think there was something about the unpredictability of a dog, the spontaneity, and just the alienness of a dog that terrified me. My mother also continues to be afraid of dogs.
Huh.
And I think often that kind of fear is passed down from a parent to a child.
This is such a cliche, but I mean, it sounds as you describe your dog and going to the park and watching your dog have so much fun, it sort of got you off the leash as well, right? It kind of loosened you up as well.
You know, Marty, it's a total cliche.
It is.
And it is so true. I mean, it's just the my truth and the truth of a lot of people I know. You know, the dog, the presence of a dog somehow liberates the owner, frees you up to have warm and fuzzy feelings, to, you know, to be more playful. Dogs offer a simpler kind of relationship than people, and it can be just wonderful and delightful, and it's changed my life.
Well, you are a TV critic, and as you describe, I mean, it's part of your job to watch a lot of TV, but it sounded like you, before you got your dog, spent a lot of time inside. I mean, you were working, but nonetheless inside watching TV.
Absolutely. I mean, I watch about 25 hours of television a week.
Oh, wow.
And that's not a complaint, because I love television, and especially now. I mean, the quality of TV these days is just outrageously good.
I agree.
But I spend a lot of time in front of the tube, and I also, like a lot of writers and just people, spend a lot of time in front of my computer and looking at my phone and my iPad, and the park has just been a wonderful break from that, you know, an enforced break every day where I have to get away from most of my screens. And I try not to use my phone at the park.
I was
and
wondering
I noticed
about that.
That.
Yeah, no,
go ahead. I mean, I'm sorry. No. Yeah, and so, you know, it's I've kind of set up a little rule for myself to not use my phone unless I, you know, unless it's some sort of work-related emergency. And just having that daily off switch has been really wonderful. You know, I come back to my various screens with a renewed sense of energy, and my eyes also appreciate it.
I bet. Let me quickly reintroduce you. That's Matthew Gilbert. He's a television critic for the Boston Globe and author of a new memoir called Off the Leash, A Year at the Dog Park, and his dog Toby is a lab, and this is Matt's first dog. He never had a dog before, and the book is about his experiences with this dog, but also his experiences with a number of the people and the dogs at his local dog park. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Mosca. Wayne, we want your dog park stories. Matt, Rebecca Balio, our first guest, was describing her faux pas the first time she ever went to a dog park. What was your first experience, and perhaps even your dog's first experience at a dog park?
Well, my experience and my dog Toby's experience were, you know, radically different. He got to the dog park, and he was so excited. I mean, you know, he was finally among his quote-unquote people. You know, there's nothing like watching a dog learn, you know, the joys of playing with other dogs and, you know, being in that kind of off-leash environment. I, on the other hand, was kind of resistant. You know, as I was saying, I spend a lot of time watching TV and in front of my computer screen, and for most of my life, I was more on the introvert side of the spectrum. So when I got to the park and met some of the eccentric people that often populate dog parks, I kind of tried to stay around the edges of the park and away from the groupings. And so we had very different experiences initially. And that's one of the things that I celebrate in my book and I celebrate in life. I think it's a cliche, another cliche about dogs, but you get the dog you need as opposed to the dog that you want. And I think I needed to get a dog who was as social as Toby is, who would kind of really pull me into these groups and in his way kind of force me to engage with some of the other owners and find the common ground of loving dogs.
You have a glossary at the back of your book about some of the words used, or I guess you made up to use at your dog park, including the Charlottes. They're at every dog park. Owners unwilling to take responsibility for their dog's aggression, no matter how many exasperated people confront them. A Charlotte is always able to dissect a violent dog fight in such a way as to prove that her dog is innocent. So this is, as you describe them, the Charlottes of the dog parks?
Yes. I laugh, but they're actually the only villains in the book,
right.
Aside from the people who don't pick up their dog poop,
yeah,
which you and Rebecca addressed as well. Yes, I mean, I think there is no excuse for bringing an aggressive dog to the dog park and not being, you know, hyper-vigilant, or keeping your dog on the leash the whole time, or somehow protecting the other dogs and the other owners from your dog. No excuse. I think if you're a sympathetic person, if you arrive at the park and you've got your dog on the leash and you say to the other owners, listen, my dog has some issues, we're working them through, people will help you. They will gather around you, not literally, but emotionally, and try to help you help the dog. If you show up at the dog park and you pretend that your dog doesn't have a history of aggression and you just cross your fingers and hope that nothing happens, you're not going to make any friends, right. And if it happens repeatedly, you're probably going to be driven away.
Well, it's pretty irresponsible when you think about it. You also described, Matt, a time your dog did get into a fight, and you surprised your own self by how quickly you intervened, I guess without thinking about the potential consequences.
Exactly. It was a profound moment for me because, you know, as I write in the book, I've seen violence on TV a lot. You know, and after a while, you just kind of get used to it. But boy, when you're in the presence of violence, at least for me, it's quite a different thing. And Charlotte's dog, a whippet named Sugar, was all over Toby in an instant. You almost couldn't see it happening until it happened. And boy, I just jumped in there. I mean, the thought of my then puppy, you know, getting hurt was just overwhelming. And to hear his little squeal, I'll never forget it. You know, there are correct ways to break up a dog fight, but in that moment, I wasn't even able to think about that. I'm lucky I didn't get bitten. And fortunately, Toby was fine, ultimately. That is not always the case.
Yes, indeed. Your book, I mean, it's about dogs and dog parks, so there's a lot of poop references. I don't know how else to say it, Matt, but if you have a dog...
Oh, Marty, I can think of a few ways.
Yes, I can, but some... No, exactly. But as I was saying to our earlier guests, it's interesting that has to be an issue at dog parks. You would just think that people would take care of this issue, but as you say, it doesn't always happen. Pupus ignorica.
Yes. I think that there are different kinds of poop delinquents. There are the people who are so delighted to be at the park talking with other dog owners that they really forget to watch their dog until, you know, the crouch occurs. And then there are the people who are a little bit more willful about it, and they just don't like doing it for whatever reason. It may have to do with germs. It may have to do with something more psychological, paging Dr. Freud.
Yes, exactly.
It happens, and it's really unfortunate because, at least from where I come from, dog owners in parks need to be ambassadors of goodwill to non-dog people. You know, we need to persuade them to be okay about having dogs in the parks. I really feel that way, and picking up poop is critical to that. You know, and as an aside, one of the things that I've learned, and that's in my book is that the people who don't pick up their dog's poop are never the people who step in it. It's always the people who are responsible about it who end up, you know, going to their car and sitting in their car and then realizing what happened. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's hard to believe that there are people who would willfully ignore that. It just seems bizarre.
Well, as you know, you coined this phrase, pupus ignorica. You also have pupus texta. I guess the idea that people are so busy texting or staring at their cell phone that they're not paying attention to what's going on.
That's right. And, you know, those people, well, whatever. They are part of the whole thing. I think it's unfortunate that you would take your dog to the park and not participate in the experience with your dog, that you would spend the whole time, you know, texting little nothings to the people in your life instead of using it as an opportunity to bond with your dog and to feel the joy that your dog feels in most cases, or just the freedom your dog feels being at the park among other dogs and dog people and surrounded by dog love.
I've heard that criticism also lodged at parents who take their children to the park and instead of playing with them or even watching them play, are also on their cell phone texting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I can't be too sanctimonious about it, excuse me, because I have my temptations, as I think we all do. You know, if I haven't looked at my phone in 10 minutes or 5 minutes, my hand is kind of wondering what it should do, you know. So it's sort of become automatic with all of us. But I think it's a good idea to find places like the dog park or like, you know, your special time with your child to really turn it off and be in the moment.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We have some callers that want to join us as well. And again, Matthew Gilbert is our guest. He's a TV critic for the Boston Globe, and he's written a memoir. It's called Off the Leash, A Year at the Dog Park, a park that he goes to just outside of Boston in Brookline, Mass. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. We want your dog park stories. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers School of Business at Camden encourages current and future accounting professionals to earn an advanced graduate degree in accounting while preparing for the CPA exam and certification. The Rutgers Professional Master of Accounting program is a 16-month accelerated program that meets on Saturday starting this August in the Princeton area. Information session will be held at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, August 6th at the Mercer County Community College. pmac.rutgers.edu or 856-225-2700.
On the next Fresh Air, historian Rick Perlstein, the author of Nixonland, talks about his new book in his series on the rise of American conservatism. It's called An Invisible Bridge, and it explains the rise of Ronald Reagan amid the turbulent events of the mid-70s, from Watergate and the fall of Saigon to gas lines and the Symbionese Liberation Army. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Looking for economic growth? Look to Africa.
For me, it's a combination of the availability of a trained workforce, great work ethic, excellent environment. It's Africa.
6 of the top 10 growing economies are in Africa, but do numbers tell the whole story of Africa's emergence in the 21st century? next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Matthew Gilbert about dog parks, the subject of his new book, a memoir called Off the Leash, and it's about getting a dog for the first time in his life and a year that they spend at their local dog park in the Boston area. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499, and we want your stories about dog parks. We have Steve from Lansdale joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say I had a wonderful dog park that I was, a regular at in Virginia. I just recently moved to the area, but the interesting thing was that the area was very compartmentalized, like socially, and you didn't have a lot of crossover with different types of people until you got to the dog park, and it was it just really built a community where, you know, we had all different races and you know, immigrants versus people who had been in the area since the 1600s. We had Russian physicists visiting that would bring their dogs. We had janitors there. We had sailors, people who were in the military coming through. And we'd even made a community enough so that when we went out to dinner, like waitresses and people at the bar would be questioning us, like, what is this organization that you have?
Oh, that's interesting. Wow.
It's so obvious diversity. And it was just really fulfilling in the area that was, you know, not like that, to have that community from the dog park.
And it sounds like, Steve, it was kind of an organic thing. It was right time, right place.
Right. And, you know, we had something in common to start with, and it just built from there. And it was largely due to we had like a, we called her the mayor, and she was a disabled woman that brought her service dog. And she just was so welcoming and built a community so that, you know, everybody could really just let their guard down and just be a dog owner for a while. And it was just really fulfilling as being there locally.
Well, Steve, I really appreciate the call to Radio Times. And, Matthew, I heard a knowing response from you when he said the word mayor.
Yeah.
Well, we have a mayor as well.
Yes.
But I love Steve's story. To me, that's... spot on. That's my experience exactly. You get people from all different walks of life, all different ages, and they all, excuse me, find common ground in their love for dogs. And it's a really beautiful thing to watch. I mean, sometimes I'm standing in the park and someone is walking toward me and I think, this person is scary. You know, who is this person? And then they get to me, and they kneel down to my dog, and they start going, goo, goo, ga, ga, goo, goo. And it's such a barrier breaker. It's really great.
Are you surprised to find yourself speaking doggy talk?
Yes, I am.
We all do it, just so you know.
I know, and some of my friends have felt safe enough with me to share their dog's voice with me, because many of us have created our own dog's voice. I'm in the pro baby dog talk. Cool.
And Toby has a bit of a southern accent, as I understand.
He does indeed. Well, he does indeed, but I can't do it on the air. I'm sorry, Marty. It's
I kind of put you on the spot there. In the back of your book, again, this glossary, you talk about dog ventriloquism. The idea is that we all sort of speak for our dogs.
Exactly. It is fascinating. We speak for our dogs, and we speak to each other through our dogs. You know, I often find that... somebody will say something like, oh, my dog really likes your dog. Look at how they click. They're so nice together. And you know that in that there is this element of that person speaking directly to me and saying that he or she likes me too. And, you know, couples do it all the time. My husband and I swore I would never do that, but, of course, we do it all the time, you know.
Well, that's what couples do, I think. Let me get Jackie from Queen Village. Jackie called us up a little bit ago, and Jackie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I was just calling. Hi. I'm a little nervous, first-time caller.
Okay, that's all right.
I live next to Mario Lanza Park, and, you know, I'm kind of listening to how idyllic it is for dog owners and dogs, but it's not idyllic for the people living next door.
Because of the noise? Because of the noise, Jackie?
Yeah, the relentless barking, especially, you know, kind of early in the mornings, in the evenings, and, you know, like many of these dog parks, they're kind of pocket parks. They are located literally below people's windows. And I think while 90% of the people who frequent the parks are very, you know, they watch their dogs, and you can look out sometimes and there's 10 dogs running around and you don't hear anything.
Right.
But then there's often, and I guess your one guest was describing them as Charlotte, who don't watch their dogs, but that 10% is, you know, under your window at 7 a.m., and there's dog fights and, you know, an hour of kind of relentless barking early in the morning, and there's no one to really appeal to and no one who really enforces the posted laws that are. And they are city laws about barking.
Well, you know what, Jackie, I appreciate the call. And actually, I want to just get your number because I want to hook you up with our first guest to see, because she has taken her dog to the park that you're talking about, Mario Lanza, which is in South Philadelphia. So hold on, and we'll get some information, and we'll get you hooked up there just to see if you can get some satisfaction. But, Matt, I mean, I think, and this is South Philadelphia, it's row homes, people close together, little pocket parks. I think Jackie has a point there.
I think she makes a great point, and I'm really glad she called. We had a similar experience here, and actually the little pocket park was ultimately closed to dogs. I am a dog owner and lover and dog park lover, and that is why I get angry at dog owners who don't control their dogs or protect the parks from, you know, people who might want to close us down. If 90% of the dog owners, as Jackie said, are keeping their dogs quiet, then that 10%, they need to, you know,
police it, really.
Yeah, they need to really deal with it because they're spoiling it for everyone else. Look, a dog barks occasionally, and I mean, if it were children would yell occasionally, and you know, that's just urban life. But if she has to deal with an hour of nonstop barking, that's not right. And whoever owns those dogs needs to go to another park that maybe isn't so close by homes, or find a way to try to train the dog out of barking. Something. But it's not acceptable to say, well, we have a right to this park, and therefore my dog can bark and wake up everybody in the neighborhood.
Jackie, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Again, we are talking about dog parks, the dogs who go there, the human beings who go there as well. And again, Matthew Gilbert, our guest, author of a new memoir called Off the Leash. And it's about his experiences in Boston or in the Boston area going to his local dog park. Let me get Elizabeth from Graduate Hospital, which is in Philadelphia. I'm saying that, Matt, because you're up there in Boston. Elizabeth, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. You guys are having a great show, as usual.
Thank you so much.
I just wanted to comment. So I own my own dog walking business and spend a lot of time in dog parks. And I think it's also interesting just to comment about how, like, dog walkers, like, will recognize each other. It's a really great place for us to network and even gain clients. I've gotten at least half of my clients from dog parks, and I just think they're really great.
Well, Elizabeth, it's not the greatest phone line, but I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Matthew, Rebecca was talking earlier in the hour about how she has used her contacts at her local dog parks to help her business and to find work. And you write about a number of people that you really develop relationships and friendships with at the park, and how you have helped each other out.
Absolutely. There is nothing like the support of the dog park community, I have found. You know, there's a real intimacy that I think dog park people develop with each other that is in some ways unique. You're together almost every day, if not twice a day. And so you're really current with each other's lives. At the same time, as intimate as you are, there's an anonymity as well, because often that's the only context in which you see these people. And so there's a nice sense of boundary. There's a great story that a woman I know from the dog park here told me about how she lost her daughter to cancer when her daughter was, you know, I think 8 or even younger. And, you know, it's such a horrible, I mean, obviously, experience. And all of her family were there, her extended family at her house, and, you know, everybody's. She said the dog park people brought something that was just perfect. They didn't need to come and be there, and, you know, she didn't need to take care of them while they were in her house. They just came, they brought food, they checked in with her. It was just, I write about it in my book, and it was just such a lovely experience for her. And she said she will always treasure the way the dog park people were for her. And you know, also, if you lose a dog, I mean, those are the people who are going to be there for you, because they know what it means.
Elizabeth, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. We're talking about dog parks, dog park people, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or you can tweet us at Marty Moss Cohen. Let me get Amelia from, looks like, Wilmington, Delaware to join us. Hi, Amelia. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to bring a different perspective.
Sure.
I'm not a dog owner. I am a dog lover, but currently with my landlord, I'm not able to have a dog. But I go to the dog park around Wilmington, especially at Carousel Park, and it's like the people who frequent there share their dogs with me. So I'm a dog owner vicariously, and I appreciate that aspect of the dog park.
And by that, you mean letting you play with them?
Absolutely.
Watch them do the kind of things that they're doing at the dog park.
Correct, and interact with them. I take my grandchildren, and they get a sense of being around dogs that they can't get at home.
Well, Amelia, let me give Matthew Gilbert a chance to respond to your comments. Does that make sense to you, Matt?
Absolutely. I love people like her. You know, you can be at the park, and someone just needs to get their doggy fix. And they come in and they watch and they enjoy. I find that happens a lot with students, college students, who are away from home and away from their family dog, and they're craving, you know, an opportunity to play frisbee with a dog, or to just, you know, stick their nose in some dog's, you know, neck. And I love those people. We also find that couples will come, young couples, looking around to see if they might want to get a dog as their first sort of maybe pre-parental or parental rehearsal. So it's great when people from outside the dog ownership world get to enjoy what we know is so, so lovely.
Amelia, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Helen from Oakland, New Jersey has to say. Helen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Can you hear me? I'm on the speakerphone.
Yeah, you're doing okay.
Terrific. I just wanted to say that some of the greatest joy I ever had in my life was my little 16-pound Chihuahua Terrier mix, and we had been driving all over the place trying to figure out where we could take him to let him run. And we found out about a dog park in Haddonfield, off-leash, and I don't believe it is off-leash any longer. And he would just get all kinds of animals. Like, the first time we took him there, 25 different kinds of dogs were chasing him, and he couldn't have been happier. It was probably the greatest vicarious joy and freedom I ever experienced in my life. And I'll take any comments off the air. Thank you.
You're welcome, Helen. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. And Matt, what she's describing is her tiny little dog in this mix of dogs of all sizes and having the time of his life.
It's amazing how being among dogs who are playing like that really can have as she said, a vicarious effect, but also a visceral effect. I mean, it makes me physically feel a sense of excitement and joy to be around dogs that are just so unedited and so free, and they're just playing. It really is intoxicating. And I think the point about the small dog versus the big dog is also a rich one. From my experience, the small dogs aren't necessarily small dogs in their own mind. And
they think they're big dogs.
I'm sorry?
And they think they're big dogs.
Exactly. I've seen my 80-pound lab be cowed by, an 8-pound chihuahua. So, there's a lot of that. And I respect small dog owners who are wary of letting their dogs mix too loosely with the big dogs, because it is true, even unintentionally, a small dog can get injured. But when it clicks, there's nothing like it. I've seen little chihuahuas playing with big Great Danes, and it's just adorable. Mm.
Well, Matthew Gilbert, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times. I have to say, you sound like you're totally in love with your dog, or perhaps all dogs. TV critic for the Boston Globe and author of a new memoir called Off the Leash. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program, including our weekly newsletter, podcast, Facebook, Twitter, and satellite radio. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoe, and thank you so much for joining us.